And okay. on those nights, we'll have different conversations, but they're all focused around discipleship in the home, raising your teenagers yep. to love the Lord and have Christ as the center of the home. My goal is to equip our parents to be able to be a disciple maker.
To the Picking Your Brain podcast, where we interview people doing ministry at a high level. And on today's episode, we have Dr. Jonathan Cofer. What's up, Jonathan?
Hey, Blake, what's going on?
Man, I'm excited to have you on. I know we don't really know each other. We're just getting to know each other, but I have a friend that I highly respect that recommended you. And so if he recommends you, then I'm cool with you. So I'm excited to have you on. I'm going to get to learn more about you, just like the audience, and learning about your expertise and the things in ministry that you do well. And so I'm excited about that. But if you would, let everybody know where you're serving and where God has you during the season of life.
Yeah, man. Well, my name is Jonathan Cofer, and I'm over in Conway, Arkansas, at Antioch Baptist Church here in Conway. And I lead up the high school ministry over here, and I've been here for right at 3 years now. So nice. It's actually my hometown. I'm from here, and it's kind of neat to come back home. It's also yep. interesting to come back home, but it's good to be back. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm serving in my hometown, so I get that completely. There's a it's fun because yeah. you have all these connections, but also there's some like, and not that I was a good kid growing up, but I'm sure there's a lot of people like, you're the minister? They trust you to do that? Sure. So I definitely get that. Well, yeah. Jonathan, the format of the podcast is going to be super simple. I'm just going to ask you a few questions about you as a minister and how you think through ministry so we can all learn from you today. And the first question I want to ask is, how much time do you spend as you prep your sermons? And maybe what resources do you use? I know we all probably have different strategies, and maybe yeah. even how you've planned your sermons has changed from 5 years ago to even 10 years ago. So like what today, what does it look like? What does your time look like as you spend in it? And then what resources do you often use as you go through sermons?
Okay. Yeah. Man, I love preparing, and it's one of my favorite things I do every week. But time is always hard. You know, time becomes an issue. Sometimes, you know, ministry happens, and so trying to figure that out. So I was thinking about this last few days. I probably spend still around 12 hours or more a week working on sermon prep, and. So I usually will start it on Thursday, the very next day, and I'll have my intern come in on Thursday mornings after a Wednesday, and I'll tell him what I plan on preaching the next week, and we'll work together through that scripture. That's something That's new cool. that I've started, but it's honestly helped me a ton just to kind of help him also learn how to do ministry and learn how to do sermon prep. And it helps me because I get to talk through with someone else. And but that's how I'll start it. One of the best resources that I've found is Logos, and I use Logos okay. like crazy. I'll prepare pretty much the whole thing through Logos and my ESV study Bible. And and even that, I put an ESV study Bible on my Logos, so it's all there, and I can just take it wherever. I think part of that started because a little over 3 years ago, I was at West Conroe Baptist Church near Houston, and my office flooded when Texas froze over, and they didn't know how to handle it. And so everything I had in my office was just ruined and soaked, and I'm like, you know, digital is not a bad idea.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
I still have a lot of physical books I replace, but I really like using the digital. I just think it's helpful. And there's some commentaries I have on my Logos that I enjoy. There's three or four different ones that I'll use.
Yeah.
So that's what I'll do. I'll go to that, and I'll start working my way through it. I could go through that in more depth if you want. Yeah, but that's
what I was going to ask. So like, if you're in Logos and you're going to do a series on Colossians, do you just type in Colossians at the top? Like, what if so for someone who's maybe never used it? What is your process for a book for a series in Colossians? Yeah. How would you walk through that?
Well, what I do first off is I want to make sure that I'm studying it and kind of understanding it mm-hmm. for me. So I will stop trying to study for other people and just how can I apply this in my life. So what I'll do is I'll read the scripture, I'll highlight it up, and I'll just write what I think it's saying, and then I'll read it again. And I have my marker board here in the back. If you can't see, I have it. Yeah, just I have it here, and I'll get up there and I'll just start taking notes and just go crazy with it. I'll see kind of how it splits up, you know, the chapters. And if I'm going to start a book, I'm going to understand everything about it. And that's helpful with a study Bible. You can use one of those if you have that and look at who wrote it, you know, why did he write it, all the questions, you know, that kind of come with that.
Yeah.
So I'll go through that. And then kind of once I get through all that, I can start piecing together what I think some points would be, how I would want to teach chapter one or how I would split up chapter one. So for instance, last semester, I had this idea. I'm going to go through James and, you know, short book. We get through it pretty quick. And it took the whole semester. I just didn't realize that until I got into it. But it took the whole semester. I took a couple of weeks out of each chapter and, because it worked that way. And I'm kind of losing my thought, but.
Anyway. No, I got you. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. There's been several guys that have said they use Logos. I have it on my computer. I haven't really dove into it. I have just a few commentaries that really kind of helped me go. But then I like a lot of other guys have said, I like to listen to how other people maybe have even addressed the text. Definitely not steal what they say, but I love, like, if I'm going through a passage and I'm like, man, I don't know how you could do points for this. And so looking at how other guys have done it, I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. I could, for my personality, I could word it this way. And so,
And that's I forgot that I'll try to do that too. I just try to make it first and see how I would do it. And then if I'm like totally off base, then that kind of tells me something, but, but sometimes like, oh, you know what? Yeah, I can use that. And so, that's really how I go through it. Yeah.
Yeah. As one of my mentors said, there's nothing new under the sun.
Amen.
So it's good.
Yeah.
It's great to learn and pick from other people. It's good. It's good. But also give credit. Anybody listening.
Yeah. And I like to, when I get this crazy idea, you know, of how I'm going to apply the scripture, I'll go to one of our other pastors on staff or, our middle school pastor's office is right next to mine. I bug him all the time. Like, what do you think about this? And, he'll say, you know, that's ridiculous. Don't do that or whatever. And so,
I got you. Well, we were talking earlier and you said you've been in ministry for 16 years. Is that right? Student ministry?
Yeah. I started, right out of high school. I'm 35 now, almost 36. So, and I just started immediately. I got into college and did an internship. And then by the time I was barely 20, I started. So
through all of these years, what would you say is one of the most unique events that you maybe got to lead, and how did it stand out, or what made it different or even successful?
Well, man, just kind of shooting from the hip on that thought. I got it. Man, one of the neatest things, it took me a second to think through, but one of the neatest things I've ever done was I had Dr. Richard Ross come in one time. And if you don't know who Richard Ross is, he's the GOAT when it comes to student ministry. And one of my mentors, and I had him for my master's classes, and I had him for a lot of my doctorate stuff as well at Southwestern Seminary. And I had him come, and he led this parent weekend. And through that weekend, he led like a Sunday school class time. He preached the morning service. And then afterwards, he came into our gym, and we had a meal. And afterwards, he led these conversations that were intentional with parents and students. And I'm telling you, like, there wasn't a dry eye after that was over. Mm-hmm. And just these conversations and even prayer. Like, he was having the students pray over their parents with their hands on their parents' shoulders, mm-hmm. and then turn around, the parents do the same thing, having some raw moments between the two. And mm-hmm. It was really cool. And I remember afterwards, my pastor was like, you know, Jonathan, after all my 20 plus years or whatever it was in ministry, yeah. that was one of the most powerful, impactful things I've ever done. And I'm like, yeah, amen. Yeah, it was. It was awesome.
Yeah.
So that was probably one of the neatest things. And since then, that's really driven my heart towards parent ministry and investing, equipping them to do those kind of things as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about parent ministry more in depth in just a little bit, but just to touch on Richard Ross for a minute and just the value I see so much in his ministry and what he does is at his age, which I don't know what he is. He's in his 70s, probably, you guess.
He's up there. I don't know.
Yeah. But even whatever age he is, for him to still be involved in student ministry, I believe he's a small group leader at his church that he currently serves in.
I think so.
And, to show that you don't have to be the youngest, hippest person to reach teenagers. They need to know
the
teenagers today want to know that you care about them. They want to know that you genuinely care and you want them to grow. And if you're a young youth pastor and you're here, and as you start aging and you think, man, I'm 30, I'm old. don't fall into that trap, man, because student ministry is such a high calling that we get to do. And so someone like Richard, who's in his 70s or maybe even older, still loving students, still investing in students, man, just students need to know you care. They don't need to know that you have the newest Jordans. Like, that may be an open door to some students,
but
they just need to know you care and you love them. And so that is cool. That's a great event.
They don't care. And the older I get, I find out I'm not as cool as I thought I was. So, you know, they don't care.
Yeah. That's very true. I feel that most days, especially Wednesdays.
Amen.
Okay, well, because you've been doing student ministry a long time, then you've been able to go through the cycles of student ministry for every year. And so how have you determined in your own ministry ways to evaluate the ministry as a whole, but maybe even your events individually, to know, okay, I know we've done this event for 4 or 5 years in a row, but this part we could tweak, or this part we need to change. What does that look like for you?
Well, one of the most helpful things that I've done as far as valuations is every single trip we take, we kind of have some notes taken throughout the time we're there. And, you know, nothing crazy. Just get your phone out and do the notes app or something, but just kind of start making a list of this went well, this did not go well, what can we do better? And then after the trip's over, wait a little bit, you know, instead of, you know, going into it again, you know, immediately kind of let it settle and just let what God did, you know, rest. And then come back and start talking about all the things that maybe didn't go so great or whatever. And I'll do that. I have a parent advisory board, if you want to you can call it that, or committee type of thing, but just full of parents. And I meet with them once a semester. We'll talk about those kinds of things. I'll tell them, this is kind of how it went. This is what it did. This is what I like to do different. They kind of help me just by supporting me and giving me, you know, better thoughts and that kind of deal, and help me plan for the next year. So we'll do that. And in those meetings that we meet every semester and once in the summer, we'll talk about what we could do better and maybe we shouldn't do that again or whatever. So that's generally what I do. I also have a group of adult leaders that help me every Wednesday, and they also serve in that same kind of way. But at Antioch, we're also required to have a team like our committee or advisory board, and that's been very helpful. But I also learned I was supposed to do that in seminary, and it's good. It's very useful. So I can see the value, and it's been helpful. So there was another part of that question you had asked, but I can't remember what it was.
I said just maybe your year as a whole, evaluating everything, and then maybe the events individually was the question.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, overall, too, this is another thought I had, and it left me, but I want to make sure, as far as in student ministry, that our students are growing and you know, things are actually taking grip in their hearts and whatnot. And discipleship's huge for me. Yes. And I want to see that students are being discipled. It's not just part of our Wednesday night program, but it's something that, you know, we're doing life with these teenagers. And it's been a slow process. I've been here 3 years and just kind of creating that culture. But over time, I've seen a lot of students just really kind of sort of grasp, I need to be discipled. And so just making sure that students are being invested in. And that's kind of a struggle right now, is it's even getting our adults involved with that and included. And some of them are and some of them are not. I would love to one day see everybody. And I guess maybe in the back of my head, that's kind of how I'm evaluating, is how many of my leaders are jumping on board and how many of our students are really diving in and doing that.
I was just going to echo one of the things you said at the beginning, that when I was younger, when I was at an event or going through it, I would just think to myself, maybe arrogantly, that, hey, man, I'll remember everything that went bad. I'll remember everything that went good, and I'll just do it, you know, when I get back in my office. It was like, no, there's so much value in get a note section in your phone and write down every thought that you have as you go through the weekend. And as you go back later, you may evaluate, that really wasn't that big a deal. All right, that worked out, you know, whatever. But as you're going through the event, take notes. And then I absolutely love what you said. Have a team around you. Have somebody. Now, if you're at a church, you know, you don't have a committee. You don't have nobody. You're the lone ranger. Well, have some parents. Have some students. Mm-hmm. Have some people that you bounce ideas off of, because one day you're not going to be at that church. So, one, you need to be equipping the people to do the ministry. And two, you need to be getting input. That it's not just an echo chamber of, I think this is good, or I think this is helpful for me. But you get the insight of the teenagers. What do y'all think that went? How do y'all think that could have been better? You know, all those things. So I agree with everything that you said. That was great.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't ever want to err on the side of, I'm just going to rule and I'm going to do it all the way I think it needs to be done. And because people have better ideas than I've got. And, I could be blind to a lot of things. Anyway.
No, those are great. I agree completely.
Yeah.
So what, and again, this is like an earlier question, this may have changed throughout your ministry, but what resources or tools have you found that have been helpful for you as a youth pastor that you use maybe on a weekly or monthly or yearly basis?
You know, as far as resources, I've found, it just depends on the group. But Download Youth Ministry over the years has actually been pretty helpful. Or DYM. They have a lot of games and different things on there. I don't really use much other than their games. Our middle school pastor here loves DYM a little bit more than I even do. But it just depends on your group. I've had some youth groups where it just didn't really do well because it's a lot of screen-based stuff. But that is a pretty neat resource that I found over the years. It's been pretty helpful. But I keep going to the thought of just having that community here in your area. If you have that availability to just kind of go to some of the area youth guys and shoot off some ideas and use each other as resources as well. That's been helpful for our area. It's better here than other areas I've been in. Just a good group of guys.
That's what I was going to ask. Have you seen in your 16 years, was 16 years ago, was it easier to have a community of youth pastors than it is now? Or is it more difficult? What have you seen over the last few years?
It is different in areas I've been in. But currently, I do think it is really good here in Conway. Our area guys, it's almost like we're best friends in a way.
That's so cool.
When I was in Houston area, it wasn't so much like that. In fact, it was kind of rare to ever talk to a youth pastor that was outside of, you know, your area. It was just rare. But back then, when I first started, it was good. I think it's just the area I'm in. I mean, I'm sure there's other areas that are great, but this is just one unique thing about where I'm at now. Because we text each other all the time and we'll meet up for coffee and just different things. We get together and do community events, which has been really awesome.
Let me ask you this. So when you moved to the community 3 years ago, did someone reach out to you? How did that get started?
Well, the good thing is I'm from here, so I just kind of know people. And that just kind of worked out for me. A lot of the guys who would consider themselves, this would be funny if they ever listen to this, but they consider themselves veterans in our area because they've been here for a while. I'm like, you've got nothing on me, bro. You don't even know. But they're a bunch of great guys, man. And just kind of get right in. And through that, you get opportunities to speak in schools, you know, FCA. And that's really one of the only ways we can get into Conway High School is through FCA. Okay. So we'll use that to our advantage and been able to do like a big Fields of Faith community wide. Yep. And that was really neat. So I've done that and it's been great to be able to kind of feed off each other.
Yeah, I think that it's when youth pastors of other youth groups get along together and can work together at big events, it just shows the students, I think, it models for them that we're not on different teams. Like we're not Church First Baptist Halton and church, you know, whatever church down the road. We're all on the same team. We all love Jesus and we're all just equipped differently. We all have different ways that we're reaching people. Absolutely. So we all have to work together for it. We all need each other. If the church down the road struggles, that's not good for us. We need them to thrive. In the same way, that church is going to struggle if we're struggling. And so we all need each other. And so as student pastors, we don't need to get territorial and say, well, these are my students and I'm holding on to them. No, they're not. They belong to the Lord. And let's just work together to equip them all. And so anyway, that's the soapbox I can get on for.
The neat thing about it, though, is like kind of even like what we're doing now, but you just get to learn from each other. And I'm just all the time learning student ministry. And student ministry has changed a lot since I first began. I mean, when I first began, Facebook was brand new, you know, like it was a new thing. It barely existed. And now you which is ridiculous. And now you got everything in the world and you're dealing with all that. And even down to how crazy student schedules are, how crazy sports are. And we're battling like students having games and practices on Wednesday nights where it didn't used to be like that. All the good stuff. But the cool thing is again, when you have some good buddies in youth ministry that you can just talk to and bounce off each other, it's just really helpful. And so I would say take advantage of that and don't ever think you've arrived because you haven't.
No.
And you'll always be able to learn and to grow. So,
The second you think you arrive, the way student ministry is done has changed completely. And then you're like back at the drawing board.
Yeah, you don't
know. What do we do?
That's right. Ethan, our middle school pastor, is 23, and I learn from him all the time. You know, it's kind of neat how that works.
So I love it. The tools you were saying, download Youth Ministry. If you haven't used it, anybody that's listening, download Youth Ministry is great. They have sermons. They have just everything you can imagine that's really good on there. But also, finding people in your area, finding people that you respect and you allow to speak in your life is massive. Final thing, and we'll begin to close, Jonathan, is how do you intentionally reach out to the parents in your ministry, and then how do you equip them? Because as student pastors, especially when we're young, maybe we don't equip the parents as much, or we don't know how, or it's intimidating. And so as a veteran in student ministry, how have you found the good ways to equip your parents and reach out to?
One of the things that I've learned doing this is that parents want to be invested in, but they also have a hard time finding the time to be invested in. And so coming in, man, I want to do all kinds of things. And I had to learn the culture, basically, and learn what worked well for our parents. So what I'm going to say is what we do here, it may work differently somewhere else. But what we've been doing is we've been meeting once a semester and having what I'm calling parent equip nights. And on those nights, we'll have different conversations, but they're all focused around discipleship in the home, raising your teenagers to love the Lord and have Christ as the center of the home. My goal is to equip our parents to be able to be a disciple maker and to have, family worship in the home, be able to know how to lead their teenagers in their spiritual journey. So that's the goal and the heart behind it. We actually have one coming up this coming Sunday, and I'm pretty excited about it. So that's one of the things we're doing. What I've discovered is that when I say parents, you are supposed to love God with all of your heart, your soul, and your might, diligently show that to your kids, raise them up to walk in the ways of the Lord. They want to do that, but they've never been taught how. They don't, you know, there's no handbook necessarily. And, you know, I can suggest some resources, but like, hey, you're a disciple maker. You're supposed to disciple your kids. They've probably never been discipled themselves. Yeah, and 100%. So whatever way that I can help with that, that's the goal, is to equip our parents to be able to disciple their own children. So, man, I hit the ground running, and I make sure that parents know they're important. Every time I'm talking to parents, that's just part of my language. I'm constantly using that of telling the parents how much they matter, how important they are. I will share Deuteronomy 6 with them as much as I can, letting them know, like, you really are supposed to be the disciple makers in your home, and just building them up. And giving them different resources. I gave last year this book by Chris Swain, who has passed away in recent years. But he has a book called To Write It on Their Hearts. Pretty sure it's what it's called. It's a little blue book. And it's so practical and helpful. And give that to them just to kind of give them a resource. But just constantly putting that and making them important. Not pushing them away and not being scared to minister to them just because you're younger than them, man, you're a prime resource still, especially because you understand their kids. You know, you may not have kids yourself if you're in that stage. And so I get that, but don't be scared to minister to your parents. They want you to. So,
I know for me, when I first started in ministry, I was 19, 20. One of my mentors said that you need to equip the parents. I'm like, I'm 20. I'm not going to sit across from a parent and tell them, hey, this is how you should parent your teenager. And so I knew that I understood social media really well. And so I worked with each parent. It was like, hey, this is, you know, they could have a spam account. And they're like, what's that? Well, let me show you what a spam account is. They could have these things. And so I used the wisdom that I had as a 20, 21 year old and imparted it to the parents. And so obviously that's changed as I've gotten older, but as a younger guy, find out what you can equip them with and do it, but don't do it from this place of I'm better than you or I've arrived, but it's here's what God's equipped me with. Let me help you. Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. And here's one other thought I had, something that I'm going to try this year. So I wrote my big ministry project on this topic. And one of the things that I wrote about was that if you're going to have Christ as center of the home, he needs to be the center of your marriage. Mm-hmm. And so I've been talking with my pastor about it, and he's going to let me lead off in this and do like a marriage weekend. And cool. And so I'm going to try to get as many of our parents involved with that and invest in our marriages too, because I think that's huge. And if the husband and the wife are both following after Christ, then man, that's like what you want. So, so I'm using that as part of what I'm doing to minister to parents as well.
So, and I'm just gonna dig a little deeper and then we'll wrap up. But like at those events, like if we do a parent training here, and our draw is we give away what we call a big three bundle. So it's a free spot to our student conference, a free spot to DNOW, and a deposit to camp. And so if they come, that draws them there. Is there anything you do that maybe helps draw them there to the event? Or is there anything that that they're like, okay, we need to go be a part of that?
I'll use that. So I'll steal that from you. that's good. Honestly, it's through personal relationships. And it's just through personal invites and just being very intentional. So far, that's what we've done. And it's worked pretty well. Yeah. One of the things I talked with in my team meetings was, what do I need to do? And they're like, well, obviously it's on your heart and it won't leave you. So let's figure it out. But one of the things that they told me is they have to have some buy-in. And I'm like, well, what's the buy-in? You know, they have to see that it's important. And, and so it's probably just going to take some time, you know. I've been here 3 years and we've started this a year ago of meeting. Mm-hmm. And so far, they've gone really, really well. I'll take whatever we can to help give them some buy-in, because I don't know that I've figured it out completely.
Absolutely. And I agree what you're saying. Yeah, to get them there, man, they need to know that you care about their student and care about them, build those relationships, and then have opportunities for your parents to be equipped. They're already using student ministry as that, like, expert. They already dropped their kids off to us, be like, well, you're the pro. Right. tell them about Jesus, but like as you said, at these events, right. help them see Deuteronomy 6. So no, actually, you're the one that's supposed to equip them. I'm just going to come alongside. I'm going to come alongside and help echo that truth to your kid's life.
Anyway. And I had one other thought too, because you just said it, is whenever you are there for their kids, man, they know they know that you care for them. And so show up to their kids' stuff. I mean, that's it's old school, but like be there for the kids and make sure that you're there for, you know, different things, you know, and it can be harder, especially as you get older, like myself and you, and we have kids that are on our own and they got their own things going on and they come first, but find time to be there for your people. Yeah.
That's a great word. That's a good one to end on, Jonathan. Well, I do want to say thank you so much for giving up a few minutes of your time to come on here and be able to share some of your wisdom. So just thank you again.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's no problem. No problem. If you're listening to this podcast for the first time, or maybe you've been listening for a while and haven't subscribed, man, please subscribe here so you can catch the next episode. We're bringing on guys just like Jonathan every week. Where we get to sit down, pick their brain, learn more about ministry so that we can all grow together. Can't wait to see y'all in next week's episode.